Welcome to the Rise Method podcast, where we make fitness information available to everyone. I'm Steve. Let's jump in.
What's up, guys? Coach Steve here, and welcome back to another episode of the Rise Method podcast. In today's episode, of course, is a very special episode. We are in week 8 of the 12-week BTC, the Body Transformation Challenge. And of course, it's exciting times in the Rise Method because we are coming up to the final phase of the BTC. That week 9 to 12 period where you'll be getting a brand new training program. Well, the training program isn't necessarily brand new. We're not reinventing the wheel, but you might see some changes in your training program, maybe some slight tweaks to the exercises, some slight tweaks to the rep ranges. It's also a great time if you wanted to transition into a new program. So if you have been following something like the build program for the last 4 weeks, it's a great time to transition to something new like the Shape program, or maybe you've been following something like our Pro series, like the Arms program, training your upper body. You might be a great time to transition into another specialization program like the Glutes program. Or if you've just simply been following the BTC program, which is a well-rounded specialized program to develop your physique, we're just transitioning into the next phase. Now, today, I actually want to start by talking to you about an interesting situation that happened to me, and that you might find some meaning behind it. So for me right now, I have a very painful tooth. A very painful tooth. My wisdom tooth is pushing in the back of my mouth, and it's quite sore. It's quite painful. It's quite uncomfortable. Now, this pain started a couple months ago, you know, maybe like a 1, 2, a 3 out of 10. It's just there, throbs, and might hurt while I'm eating, and then it goes away. Okay, fine, no issues, no worries. Don't worry about it. Then the pain started to get worse. And then now, over the last couple of days, the pain has gotten quite high, you know, cruising at like a 6, 7, spikes up to an 8, 9, once it hit even a 10 out of 10 in pain. So really quite uncomfortable. And if anyone's experienced jaw pain, teeth pain, mouth-related pain, it kind of takes over a lot of your life, right? It takes over your thought processes, takes over your sleeping patterns, your mood swings, comes in, the whole works. So it's not very comfortable, right? And it's something to reflect on, and you go, well, at what point do you make a change in your life? So at what point do you go, well, yeah, this pain is high enough that I'm going to take action? So for me, a few months ago, it wasn't a high priority for me. It was a low pain. You know, it's fine. It's just like having DOMS, not an issue. But then as that pain grew, it became higher on my priority list. And now the pain is tolerable enough, or significant enough, that it's time for me to take action. So it's not tolerable anymore. I need to take action for this. So we relate that to our own fitness journey, and we go, well, how painful is your experience with day-to-day life? How painful is it for you that you need to make an action, make a change, you know, take deliberate steps towards changing and moving away from that painful point? So that could be an experience like you are, you know, out of breath when you're getting out of bed. So you get out of bed, walk to the kitchen, geez, I'm out of breath. Oh, I'm not fit. That's painful. That's uncomfortable. I'm going to do something about that. Or maybe you walk around the supermarket and again, you get out of breath. You're like, I need to do something about this. Or you're playing with your kids, I'm not fit enough. Or your partner says, oh, let's go for a hike. Let's, you know, start a sport. Let's do this activity. And you're not fit enough for that. That's a painful and uncomfortable experience. Maybe not physical pain, but you know, you have that social pain, that emotional pain. It's like, hey, I need to do something about this. So that is your action time. So for me, I had significant physical pain. So that is my action time. And we all have that tolerance level. And we start to wonder, how could I skew these tolerance levels to make me take action? So right now, you might be wanting to, you know, make a physical change. You're wanting to lose some weight, build some muscle, improve your fitness, right? Making a health change. But you might look at yourself and go, well, I'm quite fit. You know, I've got no pain right now. But we start to go, well, how could you skew that pain to highlight it more so that it presses on you more, and then you have an action to go and do something about it? So that could be like you put yourself in positions where it exposes that pain. So you go, well, I'm going to go start play a sport, and I realize how unfit I am. It makes me take action to want to get better at it. Or maybe you expose yourself to experiences where you go, okay, I'm going to go and skydive. And then as you go through that weighing process of, oh, geez, like, am I of a weight to be able to go and skydive? And that challenging, painful, you know, confronting process might lead you down a certain path. So we start to say, how could we confront those pains and use that pain to help us get through the pain of change, because once we go through that pain of change, the pain of staying the same is no longer there, right? Because we've now changed into that new area, okay? Now, another really interesting thing that happened to me was that as I was going through my scanning process, so I go in booking to see a dentist, they said to me, you know, they need to take an x-ray of my jaw so they can see what's happening in my wisdom teeth and so they can make a decision on what they're going to do. They took the scan, and unbeknownst to them, they didn't know that I am an osteopath. I have taken radiology classes. I know how to read x-rays. So I saw my x-ray and I was like, okay, interesting. So, you know, I'm standing there on the little device with the thing in my jaw. And if you've ever been to a dentist and had a scan like this done before, you know, thing in your jaw, you have this thing kind of circle around you. And I could see on the screen my x-ray. I'm like, oh, cool, there's my jaw. Great, great. So unbeknownst to them, that they didn't know that I was somewhat medically trained, they started making comments about my x-ray and go, oh, wow, haven't seen that before. That's very unique. It's very rare. It's uncommon. Ooh, you're an interesting one. So they started to use these words in a surprising way, but it was enough for me to think, oh, hold on. is there an actual concern happening in my jaw, right? And then it feeds down that, you know, negative feedback loop of like, oh, geez, should I be worried about this? Is this something that, you know, I need further investigation and, you know, is there higher risk? Which then led us into the next room and the dentist was explaining more things, saying, okay, well, you have an uncommon presentation, you know, a hook here and thick roots there and big growth here and, you know, nerve there and wraps around here. And, you know, these words kind of thrown at me. I'm like, whoa, this is a lot to process. So here I am in physical pain and being thrown, you know, risky words and almost exemplary words where I was like, wow, this is really amplifying my experience right now. And in physical therapy, so within, you know, the osteopathy space and physios included and chiros included and heck, doctors as well, and then PTs as well, we're including this too, where we have a really powerful space of authority where we can apply a what's called a nocebo onto people. So when we use words like, let's say someone looks at, or let's say me in a clinic and I look at someone's lower back, I maybe see their x-ray, or I see how they move, and I make a comment like, ooh, you know, you've got a really bad back there, or oh, I haven't seen a back like that in years, or oh geez, how do you get out of bed with a back like that, right? So some of these comments, you know, can really feed into you, and if you are on the receiving end of that, you start to wonder, oh geez, like, is there something wrong here? Is there something that I need to actually be worried about? And then that feeds into the whole fear, the fear feeds into pain, and the pain gets worse. So for me, once I saw the dentist for the first time, my pain actually got really high because I was like, oh geez, something is actually wrong. It's not just that, oh yeah, it's just a pain that's there. It's like something is actually wrong here. So that's not very cool. We start to wonder, like, what words do we use on ourselves? What language do we use on ourselves? And does that feed into this idea of a nocebo? And a nocebo is the opposite of a placebo. So a placebo might mean that you have a beneficial outcome after a intervention is applied that is not expecting an outcome. So, you know, you take a sugar capsule, for argument's sake, you know, a nothing capsule, and you see a decrease in pain, as an example. Or if I wave my arms at you and say hocus pocus magic kazoo, and you get stronger in the gym, that would be a placebo, okay? And those placebos could be something like, hey, I'm standing next to you, you might look at me in a certain way, hey, is PT Steve, great, yeah, Coach Steve's there, Dr. Steve's there, whatever, I'm gonna train harder for him. So we have that increase in performance, a desired outcome from something that we didn't expect to produce that outcome, okay? Oh, nocebo is the opposite, where we get a negative outcome from an intervention that wasn't expected to provide a negative outcome. And that is really powerful in the language that we use. So a bit of a reflective process on what language do you use on yourself? What labels do you apply to yourself, which is a common one? So if you say things like, oh, I am not someone who's consistent, I'm not someone who is dedicated, I don't have the discipline, or I am overweight, I'm unfit, I am not the type of person that plays sports or go for a hike on the weekend, it's just not me. Oh, my genetics is that I'm X, Y, and Z, right? So these labels, these words that we use on ourselves, especially extreme words and powerful words like I am you know, unfit, I am fat, I am obese, I am ugly, whatever it is, like these really strong words that you use on yourself, they have a self-limiting belief. So we need to intervene in those languages so that we can actually see progression out of that language. So I knew this from what the dentist is telling me, that, hey, it's probably not as bad as we think. And okay, maybe it is. All right, maybe after further investigations, all right, we need even further investigations to see what we can do about my teeth. So good old Coach Steve gets to deal with a little bit more pain before we sort out this tooth situation. But I also know that, you know, this nocebic language is going to amplify my experience with pain. So what might have been just a cruisy 3 out of 10 pain is made worse from the language that we use. And we also know there's other factors that influence pain, like, you know, stress, poor quality of sleep, poor quality nutrition, poor quality health, poor quality fitness. Those types of factors influence pain. Our experience with pain, let it be teeth pain, joint pain, muscle pain, body pain, whatever it is. So these all kind of amplify. So for me, not getting good sleep because my teeth is throbbing, my tooth is throbbing in the night. Maybe I'm not able to eat well because it hurts to chew food. Or maybe I'm stressed out about my teeth. All these things kind of pile onto each other. But language is where it starts. So I just want you to think about the language that you use and how you can manipulate that language into a positive way. So like, hey, I am strong, I am fit, I am someone that does these activities. And we can model ourselves off of people, let's say, an influencer or role model, or someone you know who is fit, and say, hey, I am someone like this, and I do this, and I like doing these activities because, you know, this person is fit and strong. They do it, I do it too. I am that type of person. And that leads into a positive feedback loop mentally, so that we can actually do the things that we want to do. So that was a long-winded way of telling you my story about how my teeth hurt and how the power of language can influence these things, and how the pain that you have with the position in your life dictates the action that you're going to take. And we can manipulate these variables to our benefit once we become aware of it. Okay. So look, team, I had a couple of questions here today that have come up to me through the Rise Method app. So these are from some of our platinum members who asked these questions. So I'd like to take you through some of these questions. First one was from an individual who is struggling to get their steps up. And they're finding that with the cold weather that's coming through, they are finding it challenging to get outside and get their steps up. So they often go for a walk around the block. They often take their dog for a walk. And because it's cold and it's raining outside, they're struggling to find the time to go and train. And well, that's not the right way to say it. So it's not that they don't have the time to, they have certain windows of time to go and train. But of course, when they have that window to go and get their steps up, go for a walk, it's pouring with rain or it's really cold outside. And that affects motivation. And of course, it affects just maybe a little bit of common comfort, where, hey, I don't want to just go walking in the rain for half an hour. That's totally fine. That's totally cool. And you can't be expected to go for walks in the rain for half an hour. Sure, you know, if you're David Goggins and, yeah, man, I'm going to go out and rough and tough and put the grit in it, yeah, go for a walk for half an hour in the rain. But for most of us, that's not cool. That's not fine. So the question mark comes up of, well, what do we do instead? Okay. Now, the first thing to appreciate is that when we're looking at our steps goal, so let's say you've got a steps goal, oh, that's 10,000 steps per day. What we're trying to conclude with that target is that we are able to get that step count from the activities that we do from day to day. So that's the, you know, chores that you complete, the errands that you complete, the time that you spend to get out of bed, walk around the kitchen, walk around the house, commute to your place of work, walking around at work, coming home and doing all those activities. So that's what we're trying to conclude all our steps as. So it might not be that we need to supplement those steps. It might be that we need to look for ways to get more steps in throughout the day and make it an activity that is just an unconscious event. So something that we just do. And this can take some time, but once we nail this activity of, this is what I do, this is a person that I am, it becomes easy. It becomes something that we don't even have to really monitor. And it might take a couple of months, a couple of years for us to make it, you know, unconsciously competent at that task, where, hey, I get 10,000 steps without even thinking. But it all starts with little layers. So it might be that once you wake up, you spend the first 10, 15 minutes of your day, maybe tidying the house. So you're walking around the house, doing laps around the house, tidying up. Maybe there's ways you can modify your commute to work so that you are walking further to work. So maybe you park further away, or you park in a distance where you're able to walk and complete the rest. Maybe you're able to take public transport. That's one option. Then at work itself, maybe you are able to do activities where you are walking around the office or space or warehouse, wherever you are, maybe walking at lunchtime or walking at different times of the day. Maybe walking meetings can be an option. But when you're finding time, when you're sitting down for long periods of time, maybe that is where you target and go, okay, every 15 minutes, I need to stand up and walk to the other end of the office and come back. Not only is it going to be great for your health, it might actually be great for productivity, because that way of one, chunking your day. So you break it up into 10, 20 minute periods, and it has a name. I forget the name, but the name's not relevant, but it's an idea of working where you might set a timer for 10 or 15 minutes. That is a focused period of time where you're completing a certain task. And then once that timer ends, you might start the next task. And this can be helpful because you might be able to chunk your, especially if you're like an office-based, desk-based, computer-based worker, you might be able to chunk, you know, 10 or 15 or 20 minute periods at a time together. And say, all right, this activity is going to take me 20 minutes, or like call it a little space, a pod or a unit of time. It's going to take me this much time to complete this task. So you complete that task, 20 minutes is up. You then get up, you know, walk to the other end of the office, come back, and then you move on to the next task. So it actually will be a way that you become more productive in your day-to-day activities, more pertinent if you are working from home. So if you are easily distracted, let's say you are sitting at a computer and you've got devices, phones, activities, you might decide to set a timer for every 10 minutes or every 20 minutes. You dedicate that time to work for that period of time. And then once that timer goes off, you then stand up and do a lap around the house, maybe go outside, get some fresh air, come back, and then you go into the next block. And that could be a way that you look at time and you go, well, I have 2 hours that I need to work. That equates to 6 20 minute intervals. So I can complete 6 tasks. So you might find that if you were working continuously for 2 hours, you might be able to complete, you know, 3 or 4 tasks. But if you chunk it into 6 20 minute blocks with a small break in between, you might be able to complete 6 tasks competently and quite easily because you've kind of broken up that way. So this is some ideas on how you can get more steps in by breaking down your day a little bit easier, okay? There are some other investments that you can make. So let's say you are able to get a treadmill. So if you were going and training at a gym, you might choose to commute to a gym and just walk on a treadmill. Sounds a little bit strange where you can walk outside, walk on a treadmill, you know, it's weird. But if there's a way that it's too cold, too dark, too rainy outside, it's a way that you can still get some of your step count in by just simply walking on a treadmill in a nice, comfortable environment. Or you might invest in a small walking treadmill. We have one, it slides under our couch in the lounge room, so it's quite thin. And just gets tucked away. And it's really nice because we can just whip it out once the kids go to sleep, and we can walk and watch something on TV and just get our steps up that way. So even if it's raining cold at night, especially through the winter period here in Melbourne, you know, the sun sets quite early, and that also means that it can be, you know, dark quite early. So once the kids go to sleep at 7:30, it's dark outside, it's cold outside, it's, you know, not very exciting to go outside. So we just get our steps up that way. So there are some ideas about how you can get more steps in throughout the day, but the big rocks here would be, how can you adjust, modify, and change your environment, change your routines, change your behaviors, so that it's to get your steps up isn't a commitment. It's not an action that you need to complete. It's not like, I need to go and walk now for half an hour to accumulate my steps. It's something that we can just get in throughout the day, so that we're not putting lots of mental effort towards that, so that we can enjoy life, right? Because if we start to pile on lots of mental activities to just getting fit, that makes it really damn hard, okay? The second question here came from an individual who has really tight hamstrings. So they struggle with movements like RDLs, deadlifts, because their hamstrings feel really tight and they can't touch their toes. And they said, what are the best stretches for tight hamstrings? Now, this is one of those questions where we go, best stretches and tight hamstrings are actually two different things. So tight hamstrings might be caused from a different reason other than the actual hamstrings. Okay. And without going down too many rabbit holes, I want you to think about muscles as like the hardware. So imagine like a computer. Your muscles are things like your keyboard, your mouse, your screen. It's the hardware. And then the software that you use. So if you're on a computer, you're using, you know, the system, like let's say Microsoft or Apple, whatever it is, the software that you're using on that hardware, on that device, can dictate the performance of the hardware. Now, inside the body, the hardware, yes, is our muscles, and the software is our nervous system. So the nervous system is what communicates to our muscles. So from the brain, the brain sends a signal to the muscles and tells the muscles to contract or move or whatever it decides to do. So the nervous system is really powerful, and it also overrides this idea of, hey, we need to survive. And if the nervous system doesn't feel safe or stable or comfortable, it's going to change the way that our muscles behave. So take, for example, you know, touching your toes. If your brain and your nervous system determine that, hey, this is not a safe action because I might injure myself, I'm not stable, I might fall over, whatever it is, your brain will go, no, let's not go into this position, and it will find ways to limit range of motion. And this can be a common occurrence in, let's say, touching your toes and the tightness in your hamstrings. So your brain goes, I don't want to do this, that the hamstrings tighten up, because we don't feel safe, comfortable, stable, whatever it is. And we see this in what's called central stability versus proximal distal stability. So, you know, the midsection wanting to stay tight and stable so that the limbs can move. And an interesting activity you can try is if you were to create like false stability. So as you're going down and touch your toes, you do something like and brace your midsection, you might find that you're able to go further. Or if you use a something like a, we use a roll-up towel is a common thing that we use, but something like a pillow or a jacket or something, put that between your knees and you squeeze that towel or pillow or something. So you're squeezing and using the adductors, the groin, to squeeze that. And then with that squeezing, you get a little bit of bracing, either consciously or unconsciously, through your body, and you might find you're able to go further. The next thing would be you just take away the stability demands of standing up and just sit down, you might find you go able to go a little bit further. Then we need to consider what's happening, of course, in the rest of the body. So to be able to stretch your hamstrings come from two levers. It comes from the knee and the hip. So most of us would straighten our knee and go, yeah, I'm stretching my hamstrings, but then become oblivious to what's happening in the hip, and especially in the hip and then the other side of the hip into the low back. So right now you might be able to be in a position where you can actually rotate your pelvis. So if you're sitting down, you could rotate your pelvis backwards and forwards. So if you were to rotate it backwards, you're kind of rounding your lower back. And if you're rotating it forwards, you're kind of arching your lower back, right? Almost like you're kind of twerking, yeah? So imagine that idea, you know, we call them pelvic tilts. Now, when you arch your lower back and kind of stick your butt out a little bit, what you're doing is you're actually stretching the hamstrings from the top. So imagine like the hip to like a dial, you're kind of stretching the hamstrings from the top. So if you add that and then you start straightening your leg, you're kind of stretching the hamstrings from both ends, right? So two dials kind of turning, yeah? So for some of us, we're kind of stuck in this, what's called an anterior pelvic tilt, and you might be in like an arched position and you might just not know. You might be stiffening up through your midsection. Your brain might be protecting your spine, or you're just unsure of how your body moves in space. You might be pre-stretching your hamstrings at the top. So when you go to straighten your leg, you know, your hamstrings don't have any more length because you've really cranked up the dial from one end. Of course, you can't crank up the dial from the other end because it's too much. So you might be able to adjust the position of your spine to give your hamstrings more movement or range of motion to move, so you can complete activities. Like deadlifts, for example. So you have that range of motion in your hamstrings. Okay. Now, going back to the original question, which was, what are the best stretches for the hamstrings? You know, I truly believe that the best stretches for the hamstrings are ones that would, of course, lengthen the hamstrings. But we need to be able to lengthen the hamstring under load. So it's not about just stretching the hamstrings, just sitting there. We need to be in a position where we're quite uncomfortable, you know, maybe a 6, 7, 8 out of 10 in discomfort in the hamstring. So you're actually physically stretching and lengthening that hamstring, but then also finding a way to add load to the hamstring. So that could be through deadlift RDL patterns, or even like back extension patterns where you're adding some sort of moment arm, some tension to the hamstring so it can lengthen under tension. And that way we can change the nervous system, build capacity, build strength in these fibers so that the nervous system goes, hey, I can actually relax here. And complex structures like the GTO and the muscle spindle can go, hey, I can relax here. This is cool. This is safe. I've got this. I've got you. You've got me. Let's do it. And then the tissues can relax and stretch. And this concept can be applied to any muscle group. So if you're struggling with, your hip ability, you're unable to get hip extension or hip flexion, or you're unable to stretch your quads, or you've got tight pecs, whatever it is, it might be that those tissues are fine. Like if you were put to sleep, you know, let's say medically put to sleep, or you fell asleep, those tissues might be able to stretch, no issues. And it's literally a limitation from your nervous system that's stopping you from progressing into that new range of motion. Final question here was, what do I do if I've missed a workout? So if for whatever reason that happens, if I miss a workout, the question was a little bit longer and said, do I try to make it up or should I just start fresh? The first part was, should I start fresh or should I keep on going with my current program? Okay, so put it in context, you know, you're training 4 days a week, you're following programs 4 days a week, you missed workout number two on a Wednesday, it's now Thursday coming into Friday, and you go, well, should I do workout number two or should I try to do squeezing workout two and workout three on this one particular day, or should I just skip workout two and go on to workout three and forget it? Okay, so there's no real correct answer here. All answers are correct. You could skip workout two and go straight into workout three and kind of go back onto schedule. You could try to make it up. Or you could just kind of continue on. So you do workout two on the Friday, maybe workout three on the Saturday, and then workout four on the Sunday, and then start fresh on the next week on the Monday. The problem is if we zoom out and we go, well, what kind of pressures are you putting on yourself? So let's say the first option, let's try to squeeze in both workouts. So it's now, let's say Friday, should I do workout two and workout three? Hey, that's a lot of pressure to try to add to yourself. You want to combine two workouts together. So you are already on the back, you're already on the back foot because you've missed workouts. You might already be finding it challenging to commit to a program because you've missed a workout. And now your buy-in to get back onto the program is you need to do double the work. So it's almost like a bit of a punishment to kind of get back on track, when in a way we want to try to reward ourselves from getting back on track. So stacking them on top of each other might be a big physical, emotional, and mental buy-in to get back on track. So it might be easier to do option two, just continue on. Hey, let's just skip workout two, get onto workout three, and let's continue on and focus on being consistent. That is a fair way to approach it, especially if you do the second part, the reflective part of going, well, why did I miss that session? Is it a once-off, or is there ways that I can try to be more consistent with my programming? And sometimes if workout number two is something like legs day, we might be in positions where we are consistently skipping that program because, it's a tough session. I don't want to do it. I'm just going to skip it. Coach Steve said to skip it. I'm going to skip it. So we need to do the follow-up part of go, well, why did I miss that session? Is there a way that I can modify my environment, modify maybe the program so that I am more consistent with it? So instead of training on the Wednesday, maybe I train on the Tuesday. Or maybe if it was a really big session that I'm doing squats, leg press, hack squats, and deadlifts, and leg curls, like it's a really big leg session, hey, let's try to cut that in half so it's something that we can actually bite off and chew rather than bite off and choke on it and not have a great time on it, right? The third option was, you know, if we were to try to catch up. So it was, let's say, train on the Friday, then train on the Saturday, and then train on the Sunday, and then train on the Monday. Because previously we were doing Monday, Wednesday, Friday, Saturday, following with me. We've missed the Wednesday session, so now we've got to catch up, and maybe we do it on either Friday, Saturday, make it up on Sunday, and then on the Monday. Okay, so we're now, and then we're doing our regular session on the Monday. So we're doing four sessions back to back, which can be a lot. So it's a similar problem to point number one, where we are having a big buy-in where we go, hey, we need to overload this work. And then we can face the next problem of, hey, you've done too much now. You're tired, you're fatigued, you're stressed. The last thing you're thinking about is training. And then we go through that vicious cycle of, oh, I'm going to miss a session again. And then you miss the second session, third session, and now you're like a whole week behind. Do I make up all these sessions? So in the easiest case is just to let bygones be bygones. You miss your session for whatever reason, reflect on why you missed that session and make sure it doesn't happen again. That's really the easiest way to approach it. If logistically you can make it work to fit in that session, maybe you can do it on the Thursday and then you get back to routine on Friday. Okay, sure, you've made it work. But if we're getting close to missing your session completely, your next session comes along, you may be two sessions behind, bygones are bygones. It's happened. It's done. No point on erring on the past. Let's focus on getting you back on track so that you can stay committed to the goal that's ahead. But look, team, let's wrap up there for this episode of the Rise Method podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, let me know and I'll catch you in the next one. See you guys.